You sat down to rest with us. You waited in the shade with us. You parked your bike, threw away your coffee cup, leaned on a railing, all in our company. You've seen us, touched us, used us. You just didn't know our name. We are Metalco. We design and produce urban furniture that shapes how people live public space, together. Functional, sustainable, beautiful. Metalco, social design for real life.
This is Podfax, a podcast by Wild Urban Parks.
Hi, and welcome to a brand new season of Podfax. I'm Victoria Martin, Global Secretariat for World Urban Parks, and I'm beyond excited to kick off season 3 with fresh conversation, inspiring stories, and thought-provoking insights. Podfax has come a long way exploring topics like mental health, urban rewilding, and green infrastructure. And this season, we're diving even deeper. We're going to highlight Indigenous perspectives, youth engagement, and the role of technology in shaping urban green spaces. So to start things off, today, I'm the one asking the questions as we introduce our brand new host. So please join me in welcoming Maria Burnett to the Podfax family. Maria, welcome. We're so excited to have you on board.
Kia ora, Victoria. Thank you so much for having me. And I am so excited to be joining the Podfax family too.
So, well, if you are okay with that, let's dive into some questions so our listeners can get to know you and your vision for this season. Maria, welcome officially again to Podfax. I'm so excited that you're going to be hosting our third season. So to start, can you tell us a bit about your background and what led you to work in urban parks?
Sure. So I am an open spaces planner in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So a wee way away from where you live at the moment. And I started off my journey into the parks industry by becoming an urban planner. And it was, I guess the story will come out a little bit later in the podcast, but I sort of fell into the parks industry without really knowing what it was. And I hadn't looked back. But so before I, way that I sort of came across Wild Urban Parks, I think this is a good story too. I actually came across Wild Urban Parks through the podcast. And I was wanting to learn a little bit about parks and just try and upskill. And I was doing a bit of driving for work. And here I am now, hosting season 3. So an unexpected turn.
Oh, I love that. I think it's amazing how you came across the organization. And now, like you said, you're hosting the season 3. So I'm betting that it's going to be a really good season. And talking about more about your work, how does it connect with some of the key things that we'll be exploring this season, such as climate adaptation or technology in parks?
Well, one of the reasons that I said yes to hosting Podfax is because I think there's such a dramatic crossover between what I do as an open spaces planner and what we're going to talk about this season. So they really feed into each other. My role involves policy, planning, strategy work. And a big focus of mine in the last couple of years has been producing our district's first ever open spaces and recreation strategy. And the next project up will be our first play strategy. So a part of these projects is, you know, really thinking into the future, like the next 30 plus years. And to do that, we have to figure out where we are now, where we want to go, and we had to really question along the way, can we be doing things differently? And it can be a little bit overwhelming because there's so much information out there and there's so many different things to consider. But really, we need to be thinking about how our parks play a role in climate adaptation. And we need to be thinking, working smarter, not harder. So what technology should we be using? But where to begin? And I really think that is where an organization like Wild Urban Parks, that's where they come in handy, because you can lean on all of this information and make contacts and learn about what's happening in other places in the world. So, I think my work is very much connected to some of these key things.
That's amazing. And you and I, we've worked so hard into planning this season with the topics. And I think one of the key aspects about this season is that they're close to your heart and to what you do. So it's going to be amazing to be able to hear your perspectives. So talking a little bit about this, and you've also shared some of these ideas with the question that you just answered, but what excites you most about joining Podparks as a host? It's the first time that you're doing a podcast, so I think that's really interesting. And also, what perspectives or experience do you hope to bring to the conversation?
Do you know what? I'm not going to jump on this podcast and pretend that I know everything that there is to know about parks. And I don't. And that's why I found Podparks to begin with, because I was trying to upskill. So I am frankly excited to just continue to learn. And the way that I see it happening is that I'll be learning alongside our listeners. So I hope that when our listeners are on their way to work or walking through a park, you know, doing their dishes, whatever it is that they're doing while listening to this podcast, I hope that I can ask the right questions and dig deeper on behalf of the listeners. And yeah, just ask the questions that we're all thinking. So in terms of perspectives and experiences, I hope that we can dig deeper and look for, consider alternative options and just try and think outside the box a little bit together.
I think that something really key of what you mentioned is that we don't know everything. And as part of the organization, World One Part doesn't know everything. What I mean is that our listeners and our members are the ones that give us all the key resources and that can keep the conversation going, because this is about a dialogue, you know, and being able to share experiences, share best practices. And that's how we continue opening the conversation and sharing everything that we've learned through our journey in this sector of parks and public spaces. One of our first topics this season is rethinking urban parks in a changing climate. How do you see climate adaptation shaping the future of parks and green spaces?
I think this is a key pillar to what we do and what we're going to be speaking about. When I think about this question, it makes me think this really is the type of question that needs to be tackled with numbers, and it needs to be tackled with lots of different perspectives from all different places in the world and from all walks of life, because it's not something that could be faced on an individual scale. And I think that when it comes to climate adaptation, we are going to have to work together a little bit more. One of the key things is also going to be really understanding how our parks and our open spaces play a role in the resilience of a district. And this is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about where I live. And I know that all local government entities around the world are having these same conversations. So for us, we had risks of flooding, or, you know, potential risks of what if the dam was to break. We have risks of a high risk of a very fires where I live as well. And so how do parks and open spaces fit into all of that?
Yes, and we can actually have a lot of episodes about this and a whole season about climate adaptation, because as you said, it's an essential part of what we need to do. And we need to strive for places that can be also this helpful resource in case of the nature changing, you know, and we need to learn to adapt and to be resilient with that. And another thing that we're also talking about this season is inclusivity and accessibility. So exploring that in season 3, what are some innovative approaches that you've seen that ensure parks truly serve everyone?
I don't know if this is an innovative approach. I guess I'm actually going for a slightly different answer here, because this is not innovative. This is actually just pulling it back to the basics and thinking from a more simple mindset. So when I was trying to understand how parks and open spaces could be more inclusive and accessible where I live, I had a real reality check, actually, from a friend of mine. So this friend of mine, we played touch rugby together when we were younger, and she had an accident where a balcony fell when she was at a concert, and she ended up with a broken back and in a wheelchair. But when I talked to her about this topic, she says it's about coming back to the basics. It's about an organization. If you have facilities and if you have parks and open spaces, make sure that on your website, you are just providing the information about how accessible this facility is. So, you know, including photos and just really key information, because every individual has the ability to be able to understand, you know, what their limits are and whether they'll be able to make a situation work, whether a facility will be accessible for them. So instead of trying to go for the big ones and providing this perfectly accessible and inclusive park or open space or facility, just start with the basics and provide information. And I thought, that's a really interesting starting point. It's not to say that we can't be innovative about these things. I think we can, but yeah, just starting with the basics.
Well, I think that's really important because sometimes we want to think outside the box. And obviously that's really important because we need to be evolving in our process and in our approaches. But as you said, going back to the basics and make sure that we check those boxes are also important for the user experience. And your friend said it perfectly. And also a lot of that starts with information for the user.
Yeah, and there are other small wins, I guess, that you take. So another example that I've had, I was out visiting a park and I had some primary school teachers approach me and they wanted to talk about how we were providing spaces for that were going to be comfortable for people that are neurodiverse. You know, how were we thinking about that? And it can be an overwhelming question to begin with. Well, how are we? How are we providing for that? But again, it's thinking about the small things. So in a playground, are there going to be spaces that are a little bit quieter and a little bit less chaotic? Yeah, just like providing things like timeout zones, which can be as simple as just separating out some of the playground equipment. And it doesn't require like massive amounts of money. It just requires a little bit of thought.
Exactly. I think putting thought into the effort and into the projects are really important. And I think one of the key aspects about what you said that it's also really interesting and it's something that we should have in all of our projects is what your friend did and what you did about listening to them, you know? And I think that's part of the process that we should include, always listening to the users so we can align the project and what we can do with what they expect and what they actually need.
Yeah, because time and time again, I have been proved wrong. You know, I've had this idea of what I think the way forward is. And then when I have those conversations, I have to really tell myself, okay, listen to the answer. Like, don't assume, listen. And there are many cases where I'm surprised.
Exactly. Because we see ourselves as the experts of the parks and the public spaces, but actually they are the ones that use it daily. So they are the experts and they need to be communicating to us and we should be listening. So in this new season, we'll also be talking about deep connection between parks and mental health. And have you come across any particularly inspiring initiatives that promote the well-being through green spaces?
Parks and open spaces for me, they have had a huge role to play in my well-being and in my mental health. Not just parks and open spaces, but tracks and trails and recreation and all of the stuff that we're going to talk about in season. Do you know, I actually don't have an example of a particularly inspiring initiative, but what I want to say is that I guess from my own experience, I'm just saying it is really, really important. I was speaking about this with my colleagues just this week, the importance of actually just being able to have that connection with nature, to be able to have regular physical activity in your routine. And I am such a terrible culprit for not sticking to routine. But luckily, I work with a couple awesome colleagues who every single day at 12 p.m., off they go to go and get their time out. And, you know, for some of them, it's to the gym. For some of them, it's to the park. For some of them, it's just for a walk. And they are better for it. That's one of the reasons why I've fallen into this space and found a passion for it, is because I can see the mental impact that these spaces have. And I also can see that not everyone has access to these spaces in the same way that I do. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, particularly where I live, you know, I am so lucky. I'm surrounded by all of these open spaces. And but yeah, that's not the case for everyone. So I would like to see a world where everyone has a green space close enough to their where they live or where they work so that they can get that mental benefit.
Exactly. We as people and as world bumpers, we aspire for everyone to have access to quality places and nature places where they they can be part of their daily routine and not only the plan that you do on the weekend when you have more time, but something that can be incorporated in your daily routine. So as we know, young people are shaping the future of our cities. So I wanted to hear, like, in your experience, how can we better engage and empower youth in urban park planning and advocacy?
This is such a relevant question for me because one of the projects I'm working on is launching stage one of our play strategy for our community. So stage one is all about just understanding what play means to a community. And this is going to be a youth-led project. We've done a lot of, digging in to see how other communities have, engaged with their community on these types of projects. And I guess, one key thing here is, play is not just for children. It's for all ages. It's for all people. But this is the perfect project to really, really engage with our youth on it. And so this is going to be youth-led. And a couple years ago, I went to a conference where I listened to a woman speak about how to engage with youth. If you're going to do it, how to do it well. And I keep thinking to myself, I really need to go back to those notes and just, make sure that I'm taking these things on board. One of the key pointers that really stuck out for me during that presentation, and it comes back to what we were mentioned before, is, really listening. So you never know what answers you're going to get from children. And there's a very a common phenomenon, if we engage on these things that are relevant to youth and then, go and speak to teachers and to parents and experts in these spaces, we think they might have the answers for us. And we're often shown that what they think the children want or youth want is not actually what children and youth want. And one of my favorite examples is from a swimming pool in a place in New Zealand called Christchurch. So when they were about to construct this new swimming pool, they really did some thorough youth engagement. And they said that, what do you want? What is it that you want? And the very strong answer was, we want to be able to dive into the pool. We want to be able to make big splashes. We go to the swimming pool because we want to dive into the swimming pool. That's the whole point. But because of health and safety, it's pretty common in New Zealand that diving is not allowed unless it's in a formal sort of context. So in New Zealand, there's a popular game that people like to do, and it's where you try and do this move called a manu. So manu is the Māori word for bird or to fly. And the idea of it is essentially you jump into whatever the water is, your swimming pool, your lake, your river, and you create the biggest splash that you possibly can. It doesn't look good. There's no style to it. And people love it. And so the swimming pool now has a diving pool specifically for doing manus. I think that's a very cool story.
It is. And I would love to hear more about these in future episodes. And actually, now that you just mentioned this, Indigenous perspectives, we know that are often underrepresented in park planning. So how do you think parks can better honor and integrate Indigenous knowledge and traditions into their plans?
In Aotearoa, this is our park system is deeply intertwined with Indigenous perspectives, and it's really important that we are thinking about this. So I guess it's a special interest of mine. And honestly, I think the simple answer here is really considering Indigenous perspectives beyond a tick box exercise. Before I was in the parks industry, I was an urban planner, and processing resource consents or preparing resource consents, it's very methodical, and it's a bit of a risk that people go, okay, that, they have these steps. Have we considered Indigenous perspectives? Tick. But have you? Have you really? So that's what I would, that would just be my simple answer. Just really think about it beyond the tick box. And we will talk about all of this in much more detail later in the season. I'm excited for this episode to really understand not just how it applies in New Zealand, but other countries as well, and to hear some different stories.
Of course, I'm excited as well. And part of this is also focusing on how communities connect with their parks. And we're also going to be focusing on this during season 3. So can you share a memorable story of a park that had a significant impact on its local community? And this talking about like your professional experience, but also like your personal experience. Is there any park in your community that you can think of or that you've seen a change in the community?
Yeah, I'll start off with professional experience. So my first World Urban Parks conference that I went to was Future Green City Congress in the Netherlands in 2024. And I went on a site visit to a park called Singel Park. So it's located in a very in the historic city centre of Leiden. And it's actually a ring of seven parks that have all been combined. So we spent an entire afternoon walking through this park, which I thought seemed like a lot of time. I thought maybe we were overdoing it when I first started, but I'm really glad we took it at that pace because it was just the stories, the community stories, and it was the stories of how the community slowly came on board this project and has made it their own. And that's the only reason this park, which is absolutely beautiful, and that's why this park is such a success. It's because each community along the way has really shown their style, one of their seven rings within this one park. And you can see the style and the community are proud of it. They've invaded that space and they look after it. So that was a really special one for me. And it just showed that good things take time.
Mm-hmm.
Locally, I immediately think to this reserve called Omakara Recreation Reserve. And so this reserve is quite rural and is from a place where the community are incredibly, incredibly involved. Another type of community that just get in there and get stuff done. And I first interacted with this community when I was preparing a reserve management plan for this reserve. And there were a few suggestions about a walking track. So we flagged that down as a possibility for the future. And it has not been very long since I wrote that reserve management plan and they are about to open this walking track. So yeah, I just think it's a really good story about a community that get in there and go, you know what, we'll just do it ourselves. And they've done an awesome job. I think it's a success.
That's just so special. And like you said, I just want to bring this up again that you mentioned good things take time. And I feel like that's key because we are so used to reacting, you know, instead of planning and acting and just thinking on the long way. So I think that's also a key part of everything that we do and all the projects that we are trying to develop. And I think this idea, again, this unthought of from ideas to action, we'll be focusing on this in one episode. And we're going to be talking about the committees, the advocacy groups and other initiatives and events within World Urban Parks that drive meaningful change. So in your opinion, what is the most essential aspect of engaging with World Urban Parks resources? And you mentioned earlier on this episode that you've been into one congress in the Netherlands by World Urban Parks and also that you discovered World Urban Parks through Hub Parks. So I wanted to hear your opinion about How has it changed your, you know, vision and your professional way of thinking to be able to engage and to dive deep into the different resources that we have to offer?
Honestly, it's been huge. I would just say to people, just as a starting point, just get in there and get familiar with what some of these resources are and what's out there, because it's a little bit overwhelming to begin with. There is some pretty amazing content on like within the World Urban Parks community. So make the time to understand what is available to you and use it. It's really easy when you're busy with all these, you know, big projects and day-to-day work that we all have to face. It's easy to think that you don't have time, but make the time because it will save you time. There's all sorts of things. I mean, you know, the opposite of the podcast, but get familiar with how like with some of our committees and, you know, because that could be an option for the future. You might want to get more involved, get familiar with where we are posting on social media, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, and jump onto our community site and actually check out what we have there too, because there's a blog, there's a newsletter, there's a digital library. And as you become a member, you get access to more and more of these things. So I think this stuff is crucial and it's really, really helped me advance in my work. It's saved me time.
I'm so glad that you were able to find about World of Works. And I think what you said is true. Like sometimes it can be overwhelming, but one that you get familiar with everything that it has, like the events, the community, and all the resources, it can be actually a really good, you know, just way of getting to know more projects, more practices, more strategies around the world, and also more professionals that you can connect with. So I think we're ready to wrap up this episode. But before we do that, what are you most looking forward to discussing this season? We've talked about some of the topics that we're going to be covering this season, but what do you hope listeners will take away from these conversations?
I am most excited to hear authentic stories from authentic people. So I can't wait to hear about people's passion projects. That's one thing that's very apparent about this industry. There's a lot of passion. I'm excited to hear about how people are doing things differently, different tactics that people are taking, and to understand people's why. Like, why did you fall into this industry and why do you get up out of bed each morning to do this work? Because I think those stories, that's very inspirational and motivating and bread and butter for this episode, for this season.
As you've heard, this season of Popers is all about fresh perspectives, big ideas, and meaningful conversations about the future and legacy of urban parks. We're so excited to explore topics that challenge the way we think about green spaces, from climate resilience and biodiversity to inclusivity, mental health, and community-driven action. And with Maria at the helm, we know that this discussion will be more insightful than ever. So Maria, before we wrap up, what's one message or thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners as we kick off this new season?
This season, or this podcast, it's not about what I have to say. It's not even necessarily about what our guests have to say, although we're absolutely excited to hear from them. This season is going to be about our listeners. So this is a collaboration between us all, and I'm excited to hear different opinions from our listeners along the way. I can't wait to hear what our listeners like and what they don't like, and shape this podcast in a direction so that it is something that we're all excited to press play on each morning.
Love it. So thank you all for tuning in. Stay with us for an exciting journey ahead, and let's keep reimagining the role of parks in our cities together. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
This is Podparks, a podcast by Wild Urban Parks.
To close this episode, I want to honour the Indigenous peoples whose lands we record and learn from. This season comes to you from Aotearoa, New Zealand, on Māori land, but we also share voices from Indigenous communities worldwide. So wherever you are, we invite you to reflect on the traditional custodians of the land you are listening from and their enduring role in protecting our natural world.